Good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to call the meeting to order. First of all, we'll go around and start and say who we are. Start with Jeff.
Jeff Clements, Council Research.
Bella Roundsville, CPAC Northwest District.
John Roberts, CPAC number two.
Dr. Keyshawn Chambliss, presidential appointee.
Bruce Tyson, CPAC four.
Tommy Carter, Council Auditor's Office.
Kim Taylor, Council Auditor.
Everybody get a chance to look at the previous minutes?
One at a time, or one at a time, or both of them? There's two, I believe.
There's two of them. Let's get three. March 1st. I apologize.
Okay. That's okay. No, I move that we accept March minutes.
Second.
Adoption.
Aye.
Question. We're approved. Next, let's look over the April meeting minutes, please. Okay, thank you for approving April minutes. Do we have a second?
I'll second then.
Can I approve that? You say aye?
Aye.
Questions? Accept the April minutes. Thank you. We have a public comment. The invited speaker, the council auditor, Kim Taylor. Yes, you okay?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know there were some questions last time regarding the audit process and what we do and how we distribute, and some questions about the meetings that occur prior with the finance chair, who acts as. Keep in mind that the finance committee acts as our audit committee. So the finance chair acts as the chair of that audit committee. I was happy enough to have Ms. Oberdorfer join today because some of the questions that Jeff had forwarded on, I think, kind of go into the legal realm of sunshine noticing and what's required and that sort of thing. So I think it would be appropriate, too, for Kirby to weigh in and give her input. I wanted to stay in my lane from an auditor and not go into the legal area, but I can tell you from a practical standpoint what we do. All of our audit reports are distributed via email. They go to council members, they go to the administration, there's media that have asked to be included. So that gets emailed out to a lot of different folks within the city. And then also the council members receive hard copies of our reports, so they get a hard copy as well. We just want to make sure that we're getting it to them. That's who, you know, we're addressing it to. We report to the city council. They're our bosses. And so that's who, you know, not our main audience, but that's who they're directed to. Whenever there is, I would say, something that may be controversial or there's a lot of findings, I always reach out to the chairman of finance, who is our audit chair committee, to let him know about it and discuss it so that he knows before anything is issued, so that he gets a heads up on that and is not surprised by anything in the media. So I'll talk to him about it, or either the council president, just to make them aware that an audit is about to be issued. But then when we have, I know questions came out about the pre-agenda meeting. That is where staff, it is only with one council member that we meet, so it's with the chairman again, and we are going over that finance committee agenda. So when they're about to have their meeting, we're going through the agenda, answering questions for him on all of the bills, and then also our audit reports are on there for presentation. So anytime they're on there, I will discuss and go over that audit report with the finance chair. So it's really just staff. It's not a notice meeting because it's not a member-to-member. And I'll let Kirby go into more of that from the legal side. But it's just with one council member, and we're going, you know, prepping for the agenda, prepping for the meeting, and then going through that audit report. At the finance committee, so the full committee is where acting as the audit committee. I will go over that report. Depending on the topic, there may be questions, there may not be. There are times, too, where I get calls from council members and may discuss it, you know, off of, you know, outside of a meeting. It just depends. I had a council member call about the equestrian center audit that we issued yesterday. So it all depends. You know, definitely different topics spur different questions from them. I know that there were questions at the last meeting from you all on the wires transfer audit and, you know, the concerns, you know, did council ask questions? And I guess the thing to keep in mind, too, is our outside auditors had some of the same issues when they did the financial audit. So at a previous meeting, they had already asked some of the questions on that because it was a lot of similar topic that we covered in our audit. But it really depends. A lot of times I'll talk to council members outside of the meeting on an individual, you know, just me talking to the council member about an audit. So it may not always be in that public forum that they may ask a question. Really depends on the council member. So that's kind of our overall process. Trying to think of all the questions. I know, yes, typically do we have, I know there were concerns expressed about access rights and termination. It would seem like, you know, you see that in a lot of our audits. And I would say, because we talk to a lot of other auditors in different cities, contract oversight, probably standard operating procedures, like not having those procedures for training people and knowing what to do, and then access rights, whether it be terminating or providing access, those are probably three of the main things you'll see in a lot of our audits. It is a recurring, and I would say industry-wide. Like if you looked at a lot of other city audit reports, those basic controls, unfortunately, a lot of other cities, you know, suffer from the same types of internal control issues. I wouldn't say that this is, you know, any worse under this administration. I've seen it in my time here in the 27 years that I've been here of similar type things that, you know, with the turnover every 4 to 8 years in a mayor, you have different people come in, and a lot of times it's reorganizations that occur, and you have to re-educate people, the departments do, on what the procedures are. But we do follow-ups on every audit, so we do go back. You know, given the volume that our office does undertake, it is within a year to two sometimes where it's a follow-up. But we do go out on every audit, and we do follow up, whether it's one, two. We just issued one that it was the third time we followed up on it. So we do persist until, you know, we get answers, or we may just do a whole nother audit again on it. But as you can imagine, the wealth of audits that are out there that we have that could be tackled, I mean, there's so many different areas that we have to look at. So I've tried to hit on the main questions. I'll be happy to answer anything that I haven't answered so far from the process.
Based on a follow-up, you say it's sometimes take a year or two for follow-up?
A year to two, depending on the volume of what we're working on, and rather than having to pull off audit team members from the audit they're working on to do the follow-up, it's really a scheduling thing of trying to fit in everything for that. And keep in mind for to review the mayor's budget, all of our auditors are pulled off from July through September. So, you know, we lose that 2.5-month period for audit work while they're pulled off that too. So it really boils down to a scheduling of all the other projects.
I do have a couple questions with respect to follow-up. Number one, do your records and see about the frequency of various problems in individual departments?
We do not. We have a database that does track all of our findings, but they're not pulled together by recurring. But we kind of know over the years, like the ones that I said, access rights, and that's due a lot to there are so many different systems throughout the city. You know, every department, code enforcement will have a case management system. Tax collector has a different system. There are so many systems throughout the city, so that's why we kind of, we have these different issues. But no, sir, to answer your question, we don't specifically track it by recurring, but we kind of know over time of the same type things that, that do kind of pop up.
Do you ever recommend that individual departments that have readily identifiable problems keep a report and submit the report to you?
That would be handled through our follow-up process, so they have to respond in the initial audit.
I think that's a single item of response, isn't it? You don't keep continuous track.
We keep track of all of our follow-ups. So until all of those items are cleared, it will stay on our list, and we will go back out to that department until all items are cleared. So we do keep track that way from all the items.
I'm an old railroader, and when we had problems that were reoccurring, down there filed a report with us monthly.
Yeah, no, unfortunately, there are not recurring type reports from our audits because our audits are so unique. It's not like a financial type report where it's like submit the same thing monthly or something like that. But like I said, we do persist until we've gotten clearance on all items. And if we're not satisfied with, you know, if it's taking too long to clear up things, that's when we may start another audit, just to go back in and look at everything again and find out why. Why are they not correcting things or doing the things? Is it because maybe there's a better way that they can do it, and they just, you know, we try to reach agreement on everything in our report, but sometimes it may be another audit that's started.
Look into the procedures that they put in to remedy the problem.
Yes. Yes, we look at those, and we retest, actually. We do additional audit tests. We don't just do it by them asserting, because we send out a letter on a follow-up and they respond saying, you know, we've fixed A, B, and C, we've done this. We actually go back and we do additional audit testing just like on our original audit to verify that they have done what they've stated that they've done.
If they haven't, what happens?
If they haven't, then we do a letter saying these are still the outstanding items, and then we'll go back and we'll do another follow-up again. Probably in a shorter time frame to see, okay, have you addressed it yet? And we'll keep doing that until they do.
There are no, you know, negative consequences to that besides you guys coming over and over?
I would say in the past what I've seen at City Council is, you know, they have asked when and brought a department before them when it has been repeated, you know, that items haven't been cleared. So I've seen that happen where they have said, you know, at the next meeting, let's have the Parks and Recreation or whatever department, I don't remember which one it was, come back and talk to us about why these things aren't corrected. So that can occur. I mean, City Council, you know, it depends on the topic.
I think you mentioned something else about, I think you said it happens in other counties or cities, whatever, about when someone, I guess, is no longer there anymore and they still have access. I heard something about access.
Yes, ma'am. Those typical things like your access rights and your termination, your lack of standard operating procedures, contract oversight, I would say those are common themes throughout all city governments. And we participate with the Association of Local Government Auditors. So as part of that, it's a group of auditors just like us in all other cities and counties throughout the United States and Canada. That's how we actually get our peer review done, where other auditors come in and make sure we're following the federal auditing standards. So we talk to a lot of we go to different cities and do their peer reviews. We have people come into ours, and we talk and we look at for ideas, too, for other cities and counties. And you can see those kind of common themes throughout other governments as well.
No, go ahead. Velma, did you have a
question? No. Go right ahead.
I'm going to make sure I limit myself to 4 questions. Otherwise, I'll keep you here forever. On the question about the user access, because that's one thing that I've seen on the commission for the past 4 years. And I was listening intently to your response to Commissioner Roberts about how identify these types of issues. They're in the report. It's up to the department to address them once they provide you with the plans to how they're going to do it. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious, how do we, from a city perspective, and it may not even be your responsibility, how do we make sure that that reoccurrence doesn't continue to occur? Because I think a lot of times, a lot of departments are in their own silos. So you may find something, it's issued in a report, but unless another department happens to read it, they may continue the same practice that you just identified that they shouldn't be doing.
Right, and I would say that's hopefully where the administration comes in with overseeing all of the departments. Keep in mind that all of our responses that we get flow through them. So we don't just work with the department head. The administration is involved as well. So I would hope that at their director meetings that they're communicating, you know, hey, in Parks and Rec, we found this. Let's make sure. I don't know since we are not present at that. The tough part is, as the auditors, you know, we can't get in there and make the departments do things since they do report to the mayor. But, of course, the city council controls the purse strings. And when it comes down to approving the budget, you know, that could be times where they hold their feet to the fire or try to do things. But unfortunately, with the separation of powers, it's a difficult thing with, you know, us not having the power to mandate or make them do things.
Do you know if ITD has a policy for departments as to how they should handle employee accesses when
Yes. I know that we, in fact, sign a citywide policy on termination. I know when I've had employees leave, there's a checklist that you do to make sure that access is terminated for the employee for all systems. I think what it comes down to is sometimes maybe the main switch, so to speak, the main access to the system may get shut off. But I think sometimes your intermittent access, like maybe to the lien database, maybe, you know, that I think is where the potential for access rights termination to get missed if they have specific and unique access to other certain systems.
Does anyone keep track as to what access certain employees have other than their mainline supervisor?
Yes, like ITD would have, for instance, for our one cloud system, our main enterprise resource system, that would be where, you know, they would be able to tell right now who has the ability to process a payment, who has the ability to enter into a purchase order. There would be a master list of who can do what within the system.
And then I'm assuming they would also be responsible for the city's data security?
Yes. Yes.
So I know where to hone in on that one. The second question that I had was about the quarterly summaries. We had the city comptroller kind of come and talk about the difficulties that they've had to be able to kind of close it out, partly because of COVID and the catch-up for that one. I'm curious from your perspective, because your office gets involved in that, do you think the city's any closer to being on schedule for the quarterly summaries, or do you think there's still things that they need to do in order for them to get to that?
I know that I just talked to the CFO because the quarterly summaries were due on April 30th. So we have all of the independent authorities' quarterly summaries, but we do not have one for the city. What their focus is right now, when I talk to the CFO, is getting the year-end audit for 2021 done for September 30th of 2021. You may recall last year they had to request an extension through the state. They are trying to avoid that again. June 30th is the drop-dead date with the state.
Wait, the extension that they received, that's for that same report?
No, it's for the separate fiscal year.
Got it.
So for 2020, they missed the June 30th deadline with the state, and they had to request an extension for that. We're now doing, our outside auditors, CRI, are doing the financial audit for September 30th of 21. And they are trying to ensure that they can stay on track where they don't have to request an extension again from the state for a second year. So he said manpower-wise, their focus is on doing that rather than the quarterly summaries. So I know that we're not getting one this time. I'm hopeful maybe for the next one, that we will get something, but we'll just have to see where they are on the audit.
The issue, not attacking anyone, the issue of that is that we've gotten that same line for 2 years. And after a certain point, you start to ask, have you done anything in terms of adding additional manpower, contracts, contractors, or something to help get to that point? Because if they continue the thread, I just don't see how that changes if there's always going to be one next thing.
Yeah, and I do want to clarify, it's not the manpower of the outside auditors. Our office...
Oh, no. I meant...
Of the outside, right. I thought that's what you meant, because we actually oversee that contract. We actually talk to them every 2 weeks now. Last year, it was every week to stay updated with the delays. As far as that goes, I don't know that bringing in people would help that are not familiar with the system. So that may be the challenge of it's not just, it's needing someone that has all of the knowledge of how our system works. I know that there are still challenges with this system. Keep in mind, this was not a financial system that was designed for governments. So I think that's been part of the challenge is kind of fitting that model into something that's not designed for governments. So there's had to be a lot of customization, I would say, to make things fit. But, you know, as you point out, I mean, we would love to see the quarterly summary. It's an important tool for projecting to see where are we going to land. Are we having any budgetary issues? The whole point of it is to identify, do we have budgetary issues that we need to know about ahead of time? So it is a very good tool, and I certainly hope that as they work through the system that we will be seeing those reports. Our last one was September 30th of 2020, so that was the last time we received one.
Have the council members in general or on finance expressed on the same subject or ask the administration how they plan on resolving this issue long term?
Yes, we have definitely had between both the, it comes up when we talk about the updates on the financial audit, the year-end audit, and then also the quarterly summaries. Each time when I give the reports each quarter, I let them know that, you know, we don't have the city one again. They recognize it's a very important tool, and I'm sure I don't want to speak for them, but I'm sure that, you know, they want the report just as much as we do.
From a general perspective, if I were a member of the public and I wanted to see the quarterly summary, what would you tell them would be main points that it shows?
The main points of the quarterly summary. It really gives you a snapshot, so it shows you how much you've spent and how much revenue you've brought in. So through whatever quarter we're looking at, whether it's the first 3 months, 6 months, 9 months. And then the important part is it gives you the projections. So it shows you where do we think we're going to land? Are we going to have any challenges? Are we going to go over in salaries? Are we going to go over in something to where we may have to appropriate additional dollars, or there's something, you know, we've got to pull back and cut back on what we're spending because, you know, we're going to overspend and exceed the authority. So it really lets you know budgetarily where are you going to land by the year end, and are there any potential problems that need to be addressed?
Is there any risk the city has by not having that readily available on a quarterly basis?
I mean, I would say I can't give you a quick snapshot view to know right now. I mean, we can look in the system and we can look at revenues and expenses, but I can't quickly tell you right now, are we facing any potential problems? I can't, you know, the budget office doing the projections, they're really the ones with their finger on the pulse on everything. So yes, it's definitely a valuable tool that we would like to have to be able to see, are there any potential problems ahead?
Does City Council, and this is my last question on that subject, does City Council still have the ability right now to have an accurate gauge as to where the city's financials are on a quarterly basis without that report? So they could provide proper oversight as the
legislative branch?
I'd have to think about that one as far as, the difficult part is even if we had the finance and admin department pull actuals, it's really getting a handle on what are the projections. Where do you think, as the mayor, as the executive branch, where do you think we're going to fall within our budget? So I would say, that document's important.
I imagine it gets really difficult for you to be able to start on next year's budget if you don't even know where you are in terms of spend.
We definitely, for the third quarter one, it's very helpful for us in looking at projections to know our budget's reasonable. You've proposed a budget of this, but maybe you've spent this and you project to only spend this, so why are you asking for a budget of this? So it definitely, particularly the third quarter, is very helpful to us as we evaluate the proposed budget.
Third question. I saw a bill, this is off topic, but I saw a bill in the bill summaries for introductions. It was Ordinance 2022-321, and that was to essentially to waive the procurement code and to start a new contract with SMG and to not go through the open bid process. And I was just curious what your thoughts were on that one, because that the way that the bill summary read and the way I was kind of thinking about it, it just seemed very odd to me that we were going about it that route unless we were getting some kind of special deal to not go out again.
That was actually one of my questions. We're actually reviewing the bill right now. So staff is compiling questions now. But we have had an ongoing contract with them for quite some time. The Jaguars also have the right to weigh in on who the facility manager is. So that's part of it as well that weighs into it. They're terminating the contract earlier than they would be in order to have this 5-year period. So I would say we're in the process of just now reviewing it, but that is one of my questions on they have had the contract for several years, and would there be any benefit to doing an RFP? But again, with the Jaguars, there are restrictions within the contract that I don't want to say restrict it to that provider, but they do have the opportunity to weigh in with the facility manager.
So when is the current existing contract supposed to end?
It ended March of this year, and I believe they did an extension through March of 2023. So they're in the middle of that extension right now. But if this is enacted, it would terminate that contract to make it effective. I can't remember if it's October 1st or at the time that has passed. I don't know if October 1st yet.
And it's for another a 5-year renewal.
5-year renewal, and then I think there's 2 1-year renewal options.
Since you're in the middle of the work, I won't ask you this detailed question, but from an outside perspective, does it make sense to lock in the city into a contract post another administration, theoretically, that we have no idea on the open market whether or not we're paying a reasonable price?
That was one of my questions. Given that
I do this for a living, so that's why I'm asking this question. It just didn't make sense to me.
I haven't received yet, so we're, like I said, we're in the middle of compiling them. I don't know without getting an answer yet whether it was trying to make sure that things were in place and that, since they do perform such a big function for the city, that you have that before, you do get a new mayor in and they're trying to RFP or get a new provider, and that there's maybe gaps in time where, you know, you don't want to not have a facility manager. So I don't know, you know, the reasoning for that.
What would be the normal process if they let the contract, between the time now and when the contract expires, they went through a real open bid RFP? How does the Jaguars, based on our contract, play a role in that?
That I can't answer. I don't know off the top of my head of the impacts with the Jaguars. We've had ASM for, goodness, Jeff, do you?
I'm going to guess that they've been doing it since the 1990s.
Yeah.
Maybe the 80s.
So we've had them as, I think we did an RFP once, but I can't.
I think early in my tenure with the city, they did do a full RFP process maybe in the 90s, something like that. And chose them again, renewed them, and then they've been in ever since.
Right. But I really, I apologize, I can't answer that right now without having all the contracts in front of me and the Jaguars contracts too and all of that to answer that.
Is this going to be addressed by the time it's up in finance?
Yes, sir. We will, what we typically do, we compile all of our questions and then we'll meet with the department. With the Office of General Counsel as well, usually we'll send our questions to get those resolved before we meet at committees.
Is that publicly available once it gets to committee?
Yes.
Would that be part of the bill and the system with the attachments, or would that be somewhere else?
No, sir. It would just be something that we would have. Now, what we will put, what we'll do a write-up on the agenda, a separate write-up. For example, if there are any points we want to make or concerns that we have, that's what would get listed there. But if we've, you know, gone back and forth and vetted and gotten answers and, you know, an answer is satisfactory or something like that, that doesn't necessarily make it to the agenda, but more of a summary of any points that we want to make.
Okay.
But it would certainly be public record if you did want it.
Probably will. And my last question for you. What will happen, let's just say, if we chose not to this bill, that we let it take its course, possibly do another extension, and open it up? It just seems so weird to me that we would never, over the course of, what, two decades, at least dip our toe in the water and see what else is out there.
Yeah, and again, I recall a sooner RFP. I don't know, Jeff, yours was later. But I'd have to look back to see when there was an RFP previously. I mean, the policy decisions sometimes get made. But again, I know that there are certain things within the Jaguars contract and within there that may influence it. So I don't want to give you an inaccurate answer on there maybe being restrictions there. But I believe that it could be RFP'd. But I don't know if there are any type restrictions that would limit that.
And because this bill is only possible because we'd be waiving the procurement code to do it.
No, sir. It doing the contract would require it going through council. It went through council last time. So to approve this contract does require that it come to council.
No, I mean, as part of the bill, would they have to waive the procurement code in order to effectuate it?
Yes, I believe they do in that bill.
Got it. Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for Ms. Taylor?
I think the next question is, ITD.
This is a rabbit that we've been chasing for a long time.
I understand.
And that's the one that probably scares me the most. A lot of companies, governments not excluded, have to do a lot to make sure of their data integrity, particularly when it comes to access. A lot of companies go out of their way to try to do emails that they send out to people to make sure that they don't click on links, and then it's basically to test them so that way that there is proper assurance that employees know how to carry themselves in that, and for us to continually have access issues, even for systems that are not necessarily tied into the main system, but it just takes one person one time to do something. I just, based on what I've seen from your reports, I don't know whether or not they would have caught it if they did, unless you came along and saw that someone had access that they weren't supposed to. But you tell me if I'm wrong in that assumption.
No, I think the struggle, too, is with all of these individual systems that are within departments. Some of them can be in-house that ITD doesn't necessarily maintain even. So that's the, I think, where more of the issues are, is these unique type systems that occasionally ITD may not even have oversight over, but it's kind of on the employee's supervisor and the department head to make sure that those accesses are terminated and that they notify whether it, you know, if it is ITD to turn off something, that occurs. The one that we had in the wires transfer, that was a one cloud issue. I don't remember from that report if you could clearly say it was, you know, either ITD's fault or also some from, you know, the comptroller's office, you know, kind of being a starting point. But, it's certainly a good dialogue to have, because like you said, it's definitely a recurring problem that we have on whether it's too much access that people have sometimes or terminating people when they leave. But access rights in general are definitely a very common audit issue.
I wonder if you run any kind of automatic checks, termination papers filed.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever run payroll against access and terminate anything that doesn't have a live payroll?
When we're doing a certain audit, we'll do certain checks like that, but not necessarily on a continuous basis where we're looking at a system like that or, you know, it's...
If this is a continuing problem, wouldn't this be a desirable...
It's just having the manpower to, you know, do those continual types of checks with it. But
by the way, you just said the magic words that end up in each one of your audit reports from that particular department. But we don't have the manpower to be able to do that. You just said it, and that's the line that I see at least a lot of departments use, and the integration of OneCloud will enable us to be able to solve this issue. That's the line that we got for 3 years.
You might ask, well, how many people do you need?
I don't think it's a matter of adding. The thing that I need to do is keep the people that have been there and keep that bench of people that have the seniority. You know, bringing in new people helps, but it's critical for me to keep the people that have seniority and have knowledge and institutional knowledge, like Tommy.
Which we rely on very much. And
I know. I do, too. There's no replacement for that institutional knowledge and him being able to know, well, I need to call so-and-so, or I need to do this, or I know where to look in the code, or I know. I mean, that's the tough part is, you know, that's the hardest thing for me is I want to keep the people that are, you know, tenured and have that institutional knowledge.
So I would have a question along those lines. That's not possible because eventually these people retire or whatever. So what is your plan to try to obtain that knowledge from the people such as people are going to leave? They're going to retire. And so what is your process,
yes,
you know, to get that knowledge?
Our process is always a in-house training of passing on that knowledge. It's constantly trying to involve someone that may not know about it. We know it may take longer to get something done, but then we may have someone that has that knowledge review that product. Nothing goes out of our office without it being reviewed. Because council relies on us so heavily for accuracy that, you know, even if it's somebody that's worked on something for 20 years, we'll still have somebody else review it. So it's kind of that swapping of the knowledge. We may have a person that's not familiar even review it from a new set of eyes to learn about it. Sometimes fresh eyes catch things, even with people that have been there a long time. So we definitely are constantly passing and training. You know, I want all of our auditor ones to become twos, to become threes, to rise in the organization. And there's not, you know, they don't have to wait on somebody to retire to do that. It's just, you know, how quickly they can absorb all that knowledge. So it's a constant sharing of knowledge amongst the staff.
But
simply adding force doesn't require all your experienced people to retire. you can bring them in, you know, as junior people.
Right.
And learn the ropes from the people that are there.
Sounds like the answer is training.
Yeah.
Sounds like what they're doing.
Yeah, they have to absorb the knowledge, you know, because it should be more than one person to be able to do that one job. It should be a couple of people. So when he's down or whatever happens, or if he leaves, someone come in and
then pass it along.
Exactly.
We try to cross like departments that we review for during the budget time. You know, some years we'll switch it up so that other people can learn all the departmental budgets. Because you're really in a pickle if you rely on just one person to know about a certain area within our office.
I keep hearing this, and you have to forgive me because my background is military, but when you guys say that, okay, when someone leaves, they still may have access. I'm like, what? So because what we do, we have out processing, so you have to go through these places and check off, and at the end of the day, once all your thing is, everything is done, we have that last person make sure everything is checked off. And then we're going to make sure that, you know, that you no longer have access. So it just, when you guys say that, I'm like, oh my God, it's about to drive me out of the walls.
I know.
Because I'm military, so we have to, you know, there's a such thing called the out process. And that's when the checkout boxes is no more access. So once I retire, I'll have no more access.
Right.
And when you guys said, well, you know, this city's just doing, having the same issue. I'm like, what? So give me, it just makes me like, ooh, I don't understand that one. But yeah, I think that's, you know, it's very, you know, that's very important, you know, information that's, you know, out in the community you don't want to happen or in the wrong hands. So yeah, that's something they really need to tighten up on. It should be no excuse that, you know, another city has it. So yeah, it's okay. It's never okay, special access, you know, but about, you know, vital information and stuff.
Right. 100% agree. And on, you know, access to our financial system, whether it be inquiry or being able to do anything once you leave that job, that should be terminated, and you should not have any ability to access that system at all. Even if there are firewalls in place in front of that,
right,
that would keep you off the network as a whole, always want to have all, you know, belt and suspenders of everything handled to prevent anything.
I had one final question, and it kind of goes with everyone's theme. We are, what is it, May? We are 14 months from a change in administration. So what normally happens, particularly when it comes to finance, because I imagine there would be turnover, to make sure that as one administration starts to leave, another administration is able to kind of pick up the pieces and know what's kind of going on, particularly since, maybe I'm cynical, I still imagine we're probably going to have the quarterly summary issues by next year, but I'm waiting to be proven wrong. But I'm just curious to see how that will impact that transition and what normally happens when it happens.
You know, and being on the other side of it, we don't see the day-to-day transition. Of course, it depends on who the mayor brings in next. Mayor Curry brought Sam Moussa in relatively early to then. So he was someone who, you know, had been with the city many years, had a lot of institutional knowledge. It certainly makes things, I think, easier if you have someone that knows in the past what goes on and how to, you know, operate and contracts and all of that. We work with them and we can only provide so much because we're assistants. We're not in the daily type stuff to really help out with that. But I know in past years, you know, we've had to help them understand how to file a bill and how to, you know, get that process moving and the basic things that coming in, they just, you know, well, how do we initiate it? Who do we meet with? How do we, so we get involved more on that end. You know, I hope that whoever comes in will bring a good experienced finance person. If it's not Mr. Grivey, of course, he's been here through, I believe this is his third administration. So I don't know if, you know, depending on who it is, if he stays on or not. But we work with, you know, and help out however we can, maintaining our independence and our role as the auditors. And so we'll work with whatever happens and help whoever, you know, gets in. We do work a lot with the finance and administration department, you know, on projects. It's a continual where we're working together to vet things or answer questions or, you know, things like that.
How does it work on your side when it comes to new council members? Since they walk into a budget cycle almost like immediately.
Yeah, we do provide some initial training. Usually what happens is those that are on finance, in particular with the budget, a lot of times we'll do individual training with them that goes more in depth. Sometimes it's been many hours that we've spent in sessions because they do want to understand, you know, government accounting is not easy anyways. And so just getting your hands on all of that, but it definitely, there's a lot of training behind the scenes that goes on that we meet with them individually. Yes.
Feel better. We don't know what we don't know. So I think, and I apologize if we've spent, 45 minutes asking a whole bunch of questions. It's a lot of times, at least from my, I can only speak for myself, the only way I've been able to learn things about the city is if in the right room at the right time I ask the right question. Otherwise, you're never going to be able to have that answer. And you're just such a wealth of knowledge that we just appreciate the time that you took to...
Appreciate that very much. Okay.
Ms. Oberdorf?
Ms. Oberdorf, from the legal side, and I don't know if you'd like to hear, I know there were questions on the pre-agenda meetings that we have with the council member, and that's just one council member, so it's not a member-to-member. It's not required to be publicly noticed. But I was stating to Dr. Chambliss before you came in into the commission, I didn't want to delve into the legal side and let Kirby, if you did want to have her address anything from a Sunshine standpoint or had any questions there, I wanted to stay in my lane and not
pretend
to be an attorney.
And that I know that was a question from Commissioner Dane. He wasn't able to be here, so I'll try to articulate it in the way I think he would ask this question based on everything that you said. Is there concern from a Sunshine perspective if many of the issues that otherwise would show up in the audit report are individually addressed with council members one-on-one and leads to the point where they would never address it during committee if they chose not to say anything?
No, I mean, we're going over the audit report with them, and they'll have questions and ask questions about different items. But like I said, I often meet with council members individually, and they may want to ask about it, you know, privately for whatever, you know, they may just have questions on it and want to talk to me about it. But they're certainly, I mean, it's up to the council member of what they want to bring up, you know, at the meeting. If they get their question answered that they had on it, you know, I can't say what they do or don't want to bring up then.
Yeah, because I've seen sometimes council members, I'm still thinking as if I'm Day. I have seen sometimes council members will bring up someone either from the administration or council auditor's office to essentially restate what they told them in private so that way it's on the record. But obviously that's up to that individual council member if they choose to. I see Ms. Ordorf like shaking your head if they choose to do that.
Right.
Okay. Unless you wanted to expand on that one at all.
No, this is really not on my purview.
Kirby Oberdorfer, I'm City's Ethics Director, and I'm actually going to ask Jeff a question to help me out on this. Jeff, how many bills were filed last year?
800 and some probably.
Okay, so that helps to give, I think, a little bit of perspective, right? So council time, council resources are limited, just like our own personal time and our own personal resources and our own budgetary resources. And I love all of your questioning because it's good. I mean, you need to be able to understand how the city works and how it processes. And it can be a challenge at times, right? Because it's a mammoth size of an organization and it has a mammoth number of employees. Jeff, do you know off the top of our head how many employees we have? About 7,000 or something, is that right?
8,000-ish.
Yeah, so we have 7,000 or 8,000 employees in the city. I say we like I control the city, but we have 7,000 or 8,000 employees, and it's just a mammoth organization. And then you have a bunch of regulations and auditing principles and ethics rules and all kinds of and laws and all kinds of things to keep track of. And with 900 pieces of legislation and with a structured calendar of every other week's going to be a committee and every other week is going to be a council, there's just only so much time to handle so many issues and to try to keep things hopefully moving forward. And so that's the only thing. That's my own personal observation. I served on my by way of background. I was a member of the Ethics Commission from 2000, I think, 7 to 2012 for about 4.5 years. And then I had the very fortunate opportunity to apply for the ethics position. It was an ethics coordinator at the time in 2015. So I've been an employee of the ethics office for almost 7 years. And I will tell you that my perspective from being a commissioner on the outside and being a citizen really concerned about this community and my perspective of what I've learned on the inside, just from a process standpoint and the people and the enormity of the budget and the departments and everything, it's been really eye-opening. So I applaud you for asking the questions and wanting to engage in that dialogue because it's important and it's hard to get your hands around. But being inside has given me a really good perspective about how things work and how it's just sort of a balancing act. So anyway, that's all I would add. I don't know if that helps you, but
it did. Appreciate that though. And I'm sure that you do have some times when you probably feel like you wanted to be queen of the city first.
No, I'm on the record. Be very clear on the record, I never want to be queen of the city. That is a title I definitely don't want to have.
That was a good joke. Well, imagine that was a very great joke. Okay. I don't want to take any more of your time, but unless anyone has any other follow-up questions.
Thank her.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
The only thing that I would have is Ms. Taylor was kind enough to forward to me the questions that Mr. Day had. So we decided in the ethics office to try to put together this little quick summary of the Sunshine Law and what it applies to and what it doesn't. So I'll just leave it here for your perusal.
That'd help us too.
Thank you.
Oh, while you're here, when is the next time, because I'm due for one.
Me too.
The virtual ethics. We're on the naughty list.
Yes, the next training is virtual, I think. So we started alternating them in person and virtually. And I think the last one we did was in person, if I'm remembering correctly. So the next one is, I think, virtual, and it's May 25th. I know I like in person better, too. But you're welcome to come to an in-person one. You don't have to come in May.
I'm doing the virtual one because I love the ability of staying home.
And that works too. So long as you get your training, that's good for us.
So I know that when I read the email, it said that there was a questionnaire that we had to answer beforehand.
Yes.
How's that work? That we just fill it out and then send it to the main mailbox?
Yeah. So you fill it out and you send it to the main mailbox. And that actually was a process improvement standpoint, or by necessity, I should say, when COVID hit and everything shut down and there were no in-person meetings, trainings needed to still occur. And so after the government started back up again in June, we were asked to do continue on with the boards and commissions training, but it had to be all virtual. And it's really hard to hold people's attention virtually. Mm-hmm. And so what we decided to do was we already had a manual of materials, and we decided to do just a quick little study guide as sort of a walk through the manual to help make sure that the manual was read. And then more importantly, we build scenarios off of each of those topics and the manual questions into the training. So that the study guide we asked to be completed for the training, because each of those, not each, but 8 out of 10 of the questions are actually built into the training. We ask for your response, we generate a dialogue, and then we have additional scenarios that we build off of those.
Makes sense. Cool. I'll make sure to do that.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much for your time. And your
service. Same to you. All right. So... by the way, thank you for that. Which ones did we do? Okay. Tommy, you're the man of the hour. Why don't you go ahead with the auditor's report?
Yes, sir. Through the chair to the commission. The council auditor's office has released 2 reports since the last true commission meeting. Report number 770C. Which is the follow-up on Jacksonville Fire and Rescue Department payroll audit, was released on May 3rd, 2022. This follow-up had 2 issues remaining from the original audit, which I believe had 21 issues in the original audit. Those 2 issues were cleared up, and as a result, all of our original recommendations have been addressed, and no follow-ups will be needed. The issues we looked at in this third follow-up were the payments and process related to JFRD on military leave, and the leave and earning statements provided to determine the pay differential for supplemental pay. And then there was a opportunity for improvement consistent between the collective bargaining agreements and the payroll practices. And they had to wait to the latest round of negotiations for the collective bargaining unit to be completed before they could address this finding. So these 2 findings have been addressed, and this all the recommendations have been addressed in this audit.
Any questions on that audit? Okay.
The second report was the Equestrian Center audit, which was released on May 4th of 2022. This audit was performed. We conducted an audit of the Equestrian Center's contract between the city and Northeast Florida Equestrian Society. They have had this contract, I believe, since July of 2014. And we found that overall, we found the Parks Department was not sufficiently monitoring and enforcing the terms of the contract with the Northeast Florida Equestrian Society. And what they were supposed to be doing was to ensure that reimbursement payments were properly supported, they were accurate, authorized, and made in a timely manner. We identified several issues. The city did not request and review support for revenue collected by the Equestrian Society. Revenue offsets the expenditures that are incurred and helps reduce the amount that's reimbursed by the city. Testing identified about $161,066 in revenue that was not utilized to offset city reimbursement that could have possibly should have been basically a potential overpayment. And $15,000 that was utilized to offset the city's reimbursement that possibly should not have been, which a potential underpayment by the city.
To the Equestrian Center? The association?
To the association, yeah, reimbursements. The way it was set up is the contract is if the contract has a loss, or if the Equestrian has a loss for the month, then they can apply. They have to submit everything. They have to submit in for a reimbursement to cover their losses. And the idea being is they're bringing enough revenue to be self-supporting. And so that's why the having the support documentation is so important with this. We also found the lack of contract monitoring to ensure the terms were followed with regards to budget transfer authority, insurance requirements, inventory procedures, and reporting requirements, and also the aspects of the naming rights agreement for the Equestrian Center Arena ring.
Pretty big things.
Excuse me. We recommended over just a summary and overall that the Parks Department begin reviewing support related to the equestrian revenue collections and consistently obtain and review support related to expenditures. Two, to routinely review the contract and address contract violations. And three, the department needs to determine what actions need to be taken related to the items in the report, especially related to the length of the naming rights agreement. In other words, there was no end date on the agreement, so there needed to be a. They need to go back and look at that. Let's see.
Wait,
this is kind of an overview of the. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I said that was kind of an overview. I can go in a little bit deeper on some of the findings if you have some questions.
Yeah, the first one.
Okay.
Were they not tracking their monthly statements on a monthly basis before? I know that's what they agreed to do, but I was curious to see if they, does that mean that they weren't doing that before?
They, on revenue transactions you're talking about with coming in? Mm-hmm. On our findings specifically, they did not perform the procedures to review the support for the revenue that the city reported, that the Equestrian Center reported to the city for accuracy and completeness. Each month, they're supposed to send to the Parks Department an income statement of the company's total revenue and expenditures for the month. And along with the income statement, the Equestrian Society sent the Parks Department supporting documentation for expenditures, such as invoices and receipts, but there was supporting documentation for the revenue was not requested and reviewed by Parks Department. So they were not. They did not request the support for the revenue to show that the revenue was actually what they were reporting. In a part of our testing, we reviewed 458 revenue transactions recorded in the Equestrian Society accounting system that were not included in the city reimbursement calculations. The 458 transactions, we were unable to substantiate why 443 of the transactions totaling $157,000 were excluded from the reimbursement spreadsheet and thus not utilized to offset the cost of expenditures. And also on the bank deposits, we found that 35 of 178 bank deposits tested weren't able to be accurately traced to the Parks Department reimbursement spreadsheet. So the Parks Department was not accurately in keeping that spreadsheet updated. So that was an answer to your question. They were not keeping a good track of the revenues coming in.
I figured. And is that the responsibility of, I see in finding two, they mention a contract administration supervisor. Is that their responsibility or some other party?
It falls under the purview of the Parks Department. I believe they have a contract, so it should be in the Parks Department reviewing and maintaining the contract is who it should be with.
But do we know who in the Parks Department is responsible for
individually? And I do not know the individual's name.
Oh, it doesn't have to be the person. I was just curious about if there's a particular role,
a particular position. I do not know if that was mentioned.
Is this a normal? Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, sir.
I believe the Parks Department does have a certain number of people. I'm not sure if their title is that is responsible for oversight of contracts.
Contracts, yeah.
Public Works has contract oversight personnel. The Parks Department has someone within the Parks Department that is responsible for oversight of contracts.
And in here, the says the Parks Department, its director specifically, was designated as the city's representative and is responsible for being the primary point of contact with the Equestrian Society, which includes distributing all information received from the Equestrian Society to the correct city department and or personnel, monitoring the quality of the services being provided by the Equestrian Center.
Director himself. Okay. Is this, I know the Equestrian Center is rather unique, but do we have any similar like setups for other city parks where association is responsible for maintaining and then they get reimbursed? Or I know a lot of cities, a lot of the parks that have their own little associations that maintain it on their own.
Right. I know they're specifically to parks. I am not sure for sure. I would imagine that there are some. Trying to think of one off the top of my head. And just,
I think probably the more common model is that we contract with an athletic association to run the park, and they just do it. It's not like they report to us. They take care of it without a financial arrangement with us.
It's more of a financial arrangement to help the Equestrian Center, you know.
No, I remember. That was one of the biggest things. I think it was Councilmember Carter pushed during his term.
The associations will usually, like Jeff said, take care of the, you know, the parks and maintain the ball fields because that's where they practice and play.
Some of the city's still responsible, even those that have contract with associations, athletic associations. There is still a certain number of items within those particular parks, and they're stressed in the contracts. Where the city takes care of it, for instance, the outfield, the backfield, the mowing of the common areas, or picking up the trash, that the city still does. In some of the parks, work versus they just sign a contract and you take care of everything, and we come every year under the contract. So there are some things the city, they do it together. The contract states what the associations are responsible for and what the city is responsible for that particular park, and they're all different.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have three questions. Number one is, are any reports at all being made of revenue received? This is completely being ignored.
There were some, but not many. It's 443 out of 458, so... transactions that they couldn't substantiate were excluded off the reimbursement spreadsheets.
Okay, how does this, the net on this, find its way into the city accounts?
I'm sorry, say that again.
How does the net from this operation find itself into the city's coffers?
I don't know the particulars of the contract, but how it's supposed to be set up is that the Equestrian Society will you'll bring in revenue. They'll also incur expenses. Hopefully that they can offset the expenditures with the revenue brought in. If there's a deficit, then the city will reimburse the society.
Don't we get the net, or don't we?
No. If there's a surplus... on the income statement, that's carried forward to offset any future deficits. So the contract hopefully can pay for itself with little or no reimbursement from the city. That's the ultimate goal.
Who audits the Equestrian Society?
I'm sorry?
Who audits the Equestrian Society?
Well, I don't know who audits them. We looked at their accounting system when we did this audit, and we got into their books and records to check to make sure what they were bringing in. So we have audit rights, and we were able to get in there and to compare what they were sending us as compared to what was on their books.
That's a con that I'm trying to, what's his name? He's the director that's responsible for incentives when the city gives them out. I forgot his name. You know,
not thinking Kirk Wendland.
He's come to speak to the commission a couple times when we used to upstairs. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah, the one, he sounds like he's a smoker.
That's Kirk.
Oh, that's Kirk. Okay.
Kirk has a gravelly voice.
Not that there's anything wrong with it.
No,
that's just the only way I can remember him. I remember it was normal.
No, I'm saying he's come to all those meetings a lot.
Yeah. I remember that it's normal for the city to include a, what did you call it, an audit? Audit rights?
We have audit rights.
Audit rights whenever the city gives out incentive dollars. So I'm imagining it's the same.
And all the contracts that are with the city are supposed to have, I'll say it that way, audit rights, where the city has audit rights and we can go in and audit the contract and look at the books and records of the contract, people we were in the contract with.
When's the last time we've actually done that?
Here's one.
Touche.
Sorry.
That was a good one.
I couldn't let it pass.
That was fair. You got me on that. Oh, did that answer your question, Mr. Robert?
Okay. Any other questions on this one?
No.
Okay. Of course, there'll be a follow-up.
Our perpetuating theme about contract management.
Yes. Also, Ms. Taylor covered it. I was asked last time, I believe, Mr. Henry, you had asked me about who do we talk to, who can the True Commission talk to about employee access rights. There is a out processing out to that the city's supposed to go through. I actually printed out part of it. It's the employee separation process. Basically, the employee supervisor is supposed to open up and completes an employee separation checklist, emails it to it goes to employee services. They receive the email, they verify the accuracy of it, and then they submit the form. It goes and is saved into a library called separation forms, and then the system sends that email system out to the time, we call it TAS, time attendance system, recruit COJ, which is the HR, benefits, employee benefits, city pension, and ITD inventory. The reason it goes to ITD inventory, if the department does not want the computer or if they don't check a box to say, ITD, come get our computer, the computer stays with the department or any city property stays with the department. It of course, is, you know, but so ITD is in this process.
But from an inventory perspective.
I don't know if what all, when they get submit the form, I don't know where all it goes from there, other than these, what's on this process form.
Lovely chair folder, apparently.
So, in answer to the question, and Ms. Rumsfeld called it with next steps ITD. I would say that would be the place to start, as far as. I'm not sure who the individual is.
No, is there a way of figuring that out, who that specific person is?
I can try to find out and get back with you, or I can email Jeff. And
yeah, so that way we can invite them to the next meeting to cut out a step.
Okay.
I trust you too. I was just shocked when, I don't know whether it was Ms. Overdorf or Ms. Taylor said, I think it was Ms. Overdorf that said that ITD doesn't have oversight over all the systems. And I was like,
There are systems that are departmental.
No, I get that. Yeah. Like, but in the corporate world, even in those same situations, you can't bring on anything. And like the company I work for, you can't bring on anything unless they say, yes, you can bring it onto the system. Okay. And they have an idea as to what's on the system and what isn't.
Management uses origami, but I guarantee you, ITE is well informed and it's integrated. Some of the stuff is available, but although there are totally different systems.
Oh, sorry, yes, sir.
I think some of that may be an artifact of the famous system that was so notoriously difficult to use that a lot of departments, just for their own internal record-keeping purposes, just kept an Excel spreadsheet or an Access database, because it's on my computer. I can find what I need. I can get it instantly. I don't have to have somebody who knows famous do a query, and then somebody has to go process it, and 3 days later, we still don't have it. I just do an Excel spreadsheet and be done with it. So there's lots of those things, apparently, that were created over the years because it was easier for people who had to do something and keep track of it themselves, and ITD has no idea that they're out there. That wasn't ever within their purview to deal with those
things. You didn't make me feel any better there.
that was my understanding of how those things came to be. Now, maybe just, with one cloud, they're going to eliminate all of that, but...
And I can tell you with OneCloud, you can print a report. You can query the system, and it gives you the option. You want to print it? Do you want to export it to Excel? Do you want to export it to a PDF? So it's much easier to use. Now, still working on the data, you know, but...
that's not important.
But as far as extracting information, it is, I mean, with famous, Jeff's right, it would take a little while to, you remember, to get the information. And then just as a side note, I guess an FYI item, our office underwent an external quality control review. You heard Kim mention peer review. We're part of the peer review team. So basically, we're looked at by our peers, by a couple of auditors. Three auditors came in and looked at all our work papers and everything. You can either have a three ratings: pass with deficiency, or fail. Our office got a pass, which is the highest one you can get. So just, you know, as a side note, we are part of, we do get peer reviewed. It's every 2 years, I believe, 2 or 3 years, 3 years, sorry, every 3 years. And so it's a process that, you know, we go through. And I think that concludes my report, unless anybody has any questions. Any other questions?
That wasn't for you. I was reading this letter.
Oh, okay.
All right. Mr. Roberts, any bills that you would love to share some knowledge on?
There's just a couple. Let me see where I can find it. Actually, of course, there is the 276. I think that's of particular interest because that's a recommendation that the mayor put together a budget with rollback millage on. And so that for the council, of course, it's not binding. It's just a recommendation that he do that. But it gives you some sort of feel for what might be coming.
Do you have an opinion on it?
Huh?
Do you have an opinion on it? I know we briefly touched on it last time.
My opinion is that we're in an inflationary situation, and we should not be cutting back on taxes. I need that money. Prices are going right up behind it. The second thing is Bill 277. A recommendation for an economic development fund application.
077? 277. Okay, thank you.
What it is basically it would give the funds to a company called FMS, Florida Mechanical Systems, to build a building which will be used by the cave. And Gay says that, and Gay's an electrical company, by the way.
Oh, W.W. Gay.
Yeah, W.W. Gay. This is to replace a general office that burned down in 2020. Now, like to me that Gay must have received insurance money for this to cover it. I don't see why any money at all should go towards reconstruction of a new one. That's one. If they didn't receive insurance money, well, maybe there's an argument, but I don't see any argument for it if they received insurance money. Second thing, they said that they would add 60 full-time jobs. My question is, where did they come from? No, supposedly their general office is operating right now with the people it needs. Now, if they're going to add 60 people, well, it's a bigger operation, that's all. It's not a result of a new building. I think that, I think the question would be asked about that.
Where is it saying, maybe I'm missing it in the bill summary, that the building burned down?
Let's see.
Oh, there it is. Got it.
I
see now.
August, I think it was.
Jeff, do you know anything more about this particular bill?
Nothing more than what's in that summary.
Not this one.
No, we haven't discussed this one before. No. At any rate, that's one that got my attention. The third one is the most convoluted deal I've ever run across. That's Bill 331. That involves this. Southern Baptist would like to expand its medical facilities by a considerable degree. And here is the way it has been proposed to finance it. The city will issue bonds.
Oh, I saw this one.
And the and the money from the bonds will be used to pay off loan money to Southern Baptist, which in return will build the building. And then Southern Baptist will repay the city for what it loaned them. Now, underlying all of this is that whoever the bondholders are will somehow never pay any federal income tax. Now, if, after going through the various permutations involved here, I concluded that if comparing the two entities bond achieving results, if Southern Baptist bonds could get bonds at the city rate, the surplus money would go to the buyer of the bond and eventually the American taxpayer. Secondly, if they got a superior rate, all the money in that case would go to Southern Baptist, who again would be paid back by the federal taxpayer. Oh, it is really something. Now, Jeff assures me that this has happened before, though.
It has, yes. Every, I don't know how often, every few years, 3-4 years.
Is this a conduit debt?
Yes, it's conduit debt.
Is that what they call it?
Yes. We are the conduit by which the borrower can access tax-free bonds, which makes them attractive on the market.
What is our bonding, phrase it this way. How much bond capacity do we have for these types of special bonds?
Correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, but this doesn't show up on the city's books, right?
No, correct. I know that.
It does not show up on the city's books, but I think what it is if it works like the housing bonds,
right,
work,
that's what
that we see all the time, the state has a pool of bonding capacity that cities and counties have to apply for an allocation from the state's pool. So if it works the same way as the housing bonds work, the city would apply to the state and say, we would like $200 million of capacity from the health facilities bond pool to lend to Baptist Medical Center. And the state would approve that, then Baptist would sell the bonds and be responsible for their repayment to the bondholders.
Okay. So essentially, they're essentially using the sovereign credit of the state in order for them to be able to.
All that I can say is a particularly elegant way of stiffing the taxpayer.
No comment. But I'm not touching that one. Did you guys, I know I brought up 321 with Ms. Taylor. Probably should have gone through your report, though. But did you guys have any opinions about that one at all? I don't want to, like, go out on a limb if I'm the only one standing there. But I'm just curious if you guys had any thoughts regarding that SMG.
Some of the concerns that you brought up. Definitely something to look into. Yes, I would agree with you, absolutely. That's just too long a period of time to not even get any kind of something from someone else. Just check the marketplace.
It doesn't mean you're going to lose it. It just makes the city and
have to actually try,
you know, more trusting of what the contracts are being said and who's getting what from what.
Exactly.
So the Equestrian Center is supposed to operate nonprofit. So, but how about all these other organizations? So I think SMG is long overdue for a wake up call and have to do it and actually do some bidding against
somebody else. What else is out there? They don't know. There could be something, you know, that's better. At least it's worth testing the waters and.
Jeff, when is finance supposed to be? I don't know what council week we're on.
This week was a committee week. Next week is council, so the next finance committee is May 17th.
Is this bill already on 321? It's on. Would by the time it gets to finance 2 weeks from now, would that be second reading, or will it be first?
At the last council meeting?
I believe so.
I think. In which case, the second time through finance would be the time for discussion.
Okay, so it won't be the meeting that's 2 weeks from now. It'll be the one that's, what, 4 weeks from now?
No, wait a minute.
I'm trying to time to see if...
It was introduced...
Does it say what day it was introduced?
Is that April 26th?
I'm trying to find the... summary, because I keep on skipping it. harder than I
April
thought it
26.
Was.
Okay, so if it was introduced on April 26th, its first go-round in committee was May 3rd. It'll be back at council on the 9th for second reading, and then it will be in committee on the 17th for discussion and vote.
Got it. And I imagine that we won't be able to see what the council auditors has in terms of a response, in terms of response to their questions until the 17th.
Show up on the committee agendas that week.
And it's, since it's a, it only touches finance? Or does it go to rules? I'm trying to find. Which page is it on? Because you have it, Ms. Roundsville.
321.
It's opening up
actually,
as a
name. If Mr. Roberts has the printout,
you have the
bill titles that would have the committee assignments.
Yeah. I don't know. I just have the ones that I'm
six
messing.
Or seven.
Okay.
I find my way around the stuff. I use it. F on the file and put in a word I'm sure will be in there.
That's why, because I was looking at the one from the 16th. There it is. I found it. I'm special. I was wondering why I wouldn't be able to find it. Okay, it's in neighborhoods too. Neighborhoods and finance are on the same week, right?
Yeah, all the committees are the same week.
Okay.
Neighborhoods would be Monday, finance Tuesday.
Say anything unless we do it today. If we wanted to advise, that's our job, right? If we wanted to advise neighborhoods and finance, that they should seriously consider, telling the administration to actually open this for a bid, an RFP, regardless of what council auditors is going to say, because we have no idea what they're going to say, and this is really our last opportunity to do it, what form should that be in?
It could be one of two forms. You could either adopt a resolution asking the council to strongly consider recommending that they go the RFP route rather than a sole source. Or the group could authorize the chair to write a letter to the chair of those committees. Either way, somebody's going to have to work on some wording in the next couple of days. So,
well, since this is my brainchild, I guess I'll volunteer for that one. But do you guys have a preference as to whether or not it should be a resolution or a letter?
One get more attention than the other?
Jeff, do you have an answer to that one?
I would not think so, no.
Okay.
They would vote.
Whatever is easy for you.
No. There are certain formulas in committees. Mm-hmm. Resolution is one, you know. Should we have a motion?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well then why don't we cook up a motion and then.
Yeah, I just, since I'm the chair, I can't make that motion myself.
Okay. All right. I'll second it for you.
If you wanted to make a motion.
Let me ask you, do you want to direct it to the individual?
I want to direct it to the individual council members, but in particular the council members on neighborhoods and finance.
If we cover them all, we covered them.
Mm-hmm.
You want all of them or just the?
All of them.
All of them, okay. All right, so we'll make a motion or do you want to speak? a letter.
RFP.
Facilities management.
All right, I second. How about that?
Seconded? Okay. That was pretty much a stumble. I hope you have All right, now.
No, that's what I would want. Any discussion on that one? Yes. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Okay.
All right, motion passed. Thank you for that lovely exercise. We're basically good. The only chair's comments I wanted to make is that we had an Inspector General Selection and Retention Committee meeting last month where we approved a Inspector General's recommendation for his budget for the year, which basically keeps everything flat. He did reserve the right to make mid-course corrections if he feels, once he gets a better understanding as to how the office is proceeding and he spends more time in the position. But he wants to keep it flat for the proposal and then leave room for changes mid. All right. Anything on Mr. Raymond's not here, so does anyone have any discussion in old business on the sheriff's office staffing proposal?
Nope.
All right.
I've expressed myself. I think if the sheriff wants something, let him tell us and tell him what he's going to do with them.
It's not unreasonable for a government official. All right, new business, Sheriff's Office Budget Control State Law Change. I had mentioned this at the last meeting, and I know both of you weren't able to come. There was a state law change during the last past legislative session, House Bill 3. There was an amendment that was attached onto it that gives the Sheriff's Office the ability to make transfers without the consent of their county commissions, in our case, the city council. So I had wrote a letter to Ms. Taylor and Mr. Grivey asking what implications that would have on the city, because anything that's above $500 needs to go, $500,000 needs to go before the mayor's budget. Thank you. I always forget the acronym. Review committee, and they had a response, and I didn't realize the letter was here until after Ms. Taylor left, so there was an answer in there that, frankly, was not really her, but from Mr. Grivey, and I'll read it to you because I think it's important. I had asked a specific question. What policy legislation, intergovernment agreement, and or reporting requirements will the proposed to address the sheriff's new budget transfer authority under Florida Statute 30.49, paragraph 12. Ms. Taylor had a great response from her perspective, but I don't think that's important in this. Mr. Grivey said, Brian Hughes, Chief Administrative Officer, and I met with the sheriff and his staff respectively. The sheriff and his team are committed to the highest levels of transparency and accountability. Despite no legal requirement to do so, the sheriff has offered and agreed to continue providing information to the city finance department regarding such allowable transfers. This will continue to be the practice anyway, considering the need to provide the information to the city to effectuate the fund transfer since JSO is on the city's accounting system. This may differ from the process in other counties where the city and the county governments are distinctly separate and lack the benefits of consolidation. We will compile a listing of transfers and add a quarterly report to the council auditor and the finance committees for those performed on behalf of and at the request of JSO, similar to how we report to on other transfers performed that are currently not required to be approved by the MBRC. We are satisfied that will provide transparency and accountability over the above requirements of Florida law and applaud the sheriff for his proactive commitment to continued transparency. And that response concerns me because that is heavily reliant on all the parties sticking to that agreement, and two-thirds of those parties won't be here in a year and a half. So I really would like for whatever they agreed to actually be an ordinance, so that way it's stuck to. Even if they do have to go to the city to effectuate the transfers, and even though they say that they'll include on a report to the finance committee so that way they're aware of it, I have concerns about it. Just seems it's a gentleman's agreement, and I don't think that's enough to provide proper oversight. But that's just my opinion.
And it's effective July 1st,
2020. But I'm gonna respond to that letter because that response didn't make me warm. I don't know whether you guys all got a copy of this at all.
Yes, everybody
yes.
got.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yes.
All right, cool. All right. Commissioner comments. Any commissioner comments?
I would just like to say I noticed there were a lot of appointments through the mayor's office in various departments, commissions, and things, excluding the True Commission. I would assume by this time that the mayor's office has decided that the True Commission is not important, and therefore no one ever needs to be appointed again as long as he is mayor. Just an observation.
I will say that both the current administration and the past administration have not looked at the True Commission the same way as others, which is why the 4 years that I've been here, I've only seen two appointments. One was a carryover from the Brown administration. Two were appointments from the mayor's administration. That was Clayton Levins and John McGowan. Those are the only two. No, John McGowan was a council president appointment. So there's only been one. Then he went to the housing. And I think Clayton asked to be on the commission. That's the only reason why you end up on it.
Just an observation. I think this is a very important.
Do you, one of the, go ahead.
I think it's how little they consider that what we do is needed or worth anything, that they don't provide the number of appointments that they're supposed to. The council should provide a certain number as well. And it's only been about 16 or 17 people on the commission, and I don't think I've ever seen more than 7 people.
Yeah, it used to be.
So it's a testament to this administration, how they feel about what the work of the commission is.
Well, one of the things that I had mentioned a year ago when we were doing our yearly review as to what we wanted to work on was the idea of proposing changes to the appointments as to how it kind of be divvied up, and I was based on what Ms. Roundsville said, I bring that back up to see if that's something that we want to explore. I also talked to, because I had the I was in a random place. I got a chance to talk to, I think, Kim Pryor. She is the president of the Downtown Urban Core CPAC, and made her aware that they had a vacancy because they hadn't replaced predecessor, the last person that had the CPAC seat. So hopefully they act on that one. But I got a chance to actually tell her that last month. All right. Any other comments? Yes, sir.
One thing to think about for the next meeting, is...
The report?
Yes, I will work on that. I was thinking about your July, whether to meet in July or not. The first Thursday in July is the 7th, and that falls during the council break. That people not meet during the council break so that folks can take vacations and such.
That sounds good.
Need a vote on that?
So do you guys want to forego a meeting in July, postpone the meeting to another date in July?
No, okay.
Forego the July meeting.
Okay. Let's forego that. Do we have to vote on that, or is that just a...
If you've reached consensus, then I think we can okay. call it that.
We're off in July. I'm deleting it from the calendar as we speak. All right. Anything else that we need to do, Jeff, before we...
No, sir.
Okay, so we'll be together again on June the 2nd. Mr. Tommy's going to work with Jeff on the person that's responsible for employee access when they leave the city, and then hopefully get an opportunity to invite them to the June 2nd meeting so that way we can ask them lots of questions. Let's make sure we're nice. I'll have to remind myself of that. And with that, I'd entertain a motion to adjourn. We're adjourned. Thank you so much.
Tommy, I have a question. Is your database in such a shape that some